Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Tim, Michael, Mo, and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analyticshour and their website analyticshour.io. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hi everyone. Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. This is episode 111. You know what is great? Automation. This whole show is now fully automated. Automated. Okay. But, seriously, there are so many great ways to bring automation to the role of the digital analyst. A wise man, for a human, named Stu Schilling said it this way, you always want to look for smart, lazy analysts, smart enough to get the job done, and lazy enough to not want to do it over and over again. Like writing and delivering the introduction to a podcast. Okay. Well, let's get into it. Tim, are you a fan of automation?
Absolutely.
Mo, have you delved into automation yet in your new role?
Absolutely. Actually, I'm going to probably touch on that today because I need some advice.
And I am Michael Helbling.
And my automation capabilities are mostly limited to keyboard shortcuts in Excel. So, obviously, we needed a guest who could give us and our listeners a leg up on thinking about automation and analytics and its possibilities. Eric Dreesen is an analytics evangelist at Greenhouse. He's spent the last 7.5 years and held numerous different roles in that company. But luckily, today he is our guest. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Hey, everyone.
Howdy.
I feel like, how you going?
How you going? Exactly. So this will be a test, you know, because, you know, we've heard, Eric, that you're very talkative. And so, no, I'm just kidding. So let's get into automation and start breaking it down a little bit. So maybe we could start with just some of the categories that you see, Eric, in your work, and then we'll go into more depth on each of those.
Well, basically what we do it with my team is actually – we found out in our day-to-day activities, there's a lot of stuff we just do every day on a repetitive, basically in a repetitive way. And some of those things are not really fun to do. For example, placing tags, that's not the most fun thing to do, or running a data check every day for the same client. So we try to automate a lot of that stuff that's automatable.
Well, how does the data check piece work? Because I've known people who say, well, I've got automation and that I've set up a, you know, my own little report that I can look at every day to see if anything has gone awry. And then there's the side of, we're going to set up alerts to trigger if something has gone awry. Both of those have some downsides. The latter being, can be pretty, like in Adobe Analytics, are pretty cumbersome to set up and they're not necessarily easy to tune. So how do you do the automation of the data checks?
Basically, what we do with the team is whenever we see an opportunity like that, we just try to plan a full day with the whole team. We call it a hackathon, and we just invest heavily in a solution that we think it's valuable. And one of those for us was the data checks. And what we did is we basically thought of the same way as of Google Analytics data checks, because I don't know if you know the alerting function in that system, but it's also pretty limited. That's a nice way to put it, even pretty limited. But basically, with the API of the reporting API, you can do a lot of really advanced checks because you have access to all the data that's in the reporting API of Google Analytics. So what we did is first set up basically a prototype where we get data from Google Analytics through the API and send a message to Slack based on what we see. So the check could be a flatline check or just a report on numbers of the previous day. And then we try to set it up so that a lot of non-technical people can use the system as well. So right now, we basically have a Google Sheet where people can fill out a check for a client. And they can even like set the name they want to use for a metric in the notification, because sometimes like quantity resembles the amount of insured people, for example, and you want to show that as a readable message. And basically all those things are linked together. So right now we have a system that allows non-technical people to set up an alert based on anything that's available in the API. and it sends a human readable message to Slack whenever something is wrong or just a number gets needs to be reported on for a campaign.
So my question is, though, in a previous role, we had so many notifications set up. It just got to the point where, like, people kind of stopped giving a shit. And, you know, particularly with email notifications, they would just filter all the messages out because they were getting, you know, 120 notifications a day. What's the culture like at your company? Like, is there one owner for a particular notification? Is it going to a group distro? How are you managing that?
Well, basically, we mainly use Slack for the analytics notifications right now. And what we do is basically whenever something is wrong, so whenever there's a flatliner of an important campaign metric, for example, we make sure to assign users to the message as well. So the people who are responsible for a campaign, and that is mostly someone who's a campaign optimizer at our agency and an analyst who's responsible for the Google Analytics implementation, for example, they get a direct notification as well. So everyone who's in the channel knows that something's up, but there are two people assigned to the notification as well. So you get a direct message and also an alert on your computer that something is off that you need to look into.
Which is that's kind of the alerts. Maybe that is one of the, it seems like there are two challenges with alerts. One is getting them tuned so that you don't have false positives. Like that's definitely the, oh, we set the threshold too conservatively and you get inundated with notifications. It's funny with Slack, AlarmDuck, I mean, a couple of that's kind of an Adobe Analytics, a solution built for Adobe Analytics, where I've actually seen that work, where when the notification pops up, it's typically a legit issue. So I guess how much tuning has to happen, and then I think separately, you still need people to recognize there's value in spending the time, even if you streamlined it in the Google Sheet. Do you have a struggle getting people to say, you know, this matters? Like, to me, alerts, the people are most interested in them when they're least helpful after something is broken and it was missed. It's the closing the doors to the barn after the horses have already gotten out.
We look at basically all the, in the case of Google Analytics, all the goals that are configured that are used in a campaign. So we have a automized campaign reporting system as well. And everything that's configured as a goal in that system, we currently configure it for the campaign people in the sheet. So they don't set up the notifications themselves, but we make sure that every notification is used for a metric that's used in the campaign optimization process. So we do not track like a metric because we think it's interesting. We only track them when we know they are used in campaigns. And because of that, we always also think it's really important that whenever that thing flatlines, that should be a big alarm to anyone. So we make sure that people get instant notifications, and that both someone from the analytics team as someone from the campaign team are updated about the issue.
And do you have notifications for spikes as well? So the other day, one of the engineers is like, oh, this is so weird. We've got this huge influx of traffic, and it was from some random IP address, which turned out to be a bot. So do you, yeah, I mean, because you keep talking about flatlining, do you have the kind of the inverse of that, of where something is hitting you and suddenly your metric is totally stuffed? As I experienced.
We don't have that right now. We are looking into ways to look like at percentual differences, or what I think is a really good example as well is what Tim showed previous year at Super Week with the anomaly detection. So basically make a prediction for today and see if the current data point is in or outside of that prediction. Mm. But we do try to create custom notifications based on what the business needs. So we didn't really get this request in yet. But what we do have is, for example, check that monitors whether running A-B test data is coming into Google Analytics. So when you connect, for example, VWO or Optimizely to Google Analytics, you want to make sure that as soon as your test starts running, so from the start date of your test, the data comes into Analytics. So we have a notification for that. So we see whether we get a notification when it's not happening. And we have something for funnel logic as well. So for our campaigns, we often set up a goal for the thank you page, personal detail page, basket, and stuff like that. It would be really weird if like the personal detail page has fewer hits than the thank you page. So we also do a logic check like that. But that's not really a spike check or anything, but just it should not be possible that someone enters the thank you page without having first visited the the personal detail page. So that's, we should get an instant notification about that when it happens.
Do you ever feel like there are circumstances, though, where the amount of effort to set up these notifications kind of, because from a reporting perspective, I know that I've had this happen plenty of times where something, I don't know, it takes you 5 minutes every day and you figure out to automate it. It's probably going to take you like 2.5 weeks. Is that actually worth it in terms of investment? Is that a scenario that's come up for you as of yet?
Yeah, we do. I had a guy on my team who basically made a priority of all the repetitive tasks that we do. We made basically a sort of priority where you both look at the amount of effort that's required to automate the task and the impact it would make. But what we try to do now is just we sit together with the team and we define a topic. And for a lot of automation things, we don't really have the time to invest in it during our daily jobs. So what we do is we plan a hackathon where we just work on it with the whole team. And the end of the hackathon, we have a minimal viable product, something that works, that proves the point. And then we assign a product owner to the product that makes sure that it keeps on developing and gets new features added to it. And we also try to set a target. So within 2 or 3 months, we want to make sure that, for example, 20 of our clients are connected to the reporting notifications. So we know that they're actually used as well.
But that's an interesting, because we've mostly been talking about alerting, but then Mo, you were bringing up reporting, and it's interesting when you're thinking about automation, there's the time savings aspect of it, which I feel like reporting or kind of a, regardless, I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to have to spend 5 minutes a day, or I'm going to spend 15 minutes on Monday mornings, and doing a time savings analysis is one way to go at it. With the alerts where we started, there's this separate part where automation, it's like nobody's going to look at the data every day or every hour to monitor it. So it seems like that's a different calculus. Like if you don't have automation, it's not going to happen. And there could be a business loss because something could break and it could not be caught. I feel like there are probably other factors that may go into when to automate. I mean, I feel like I've probably automated stuff just because maybe the time savings didn't fully justify it, but it was just kind of the psychological
annoyingness
of it. And that, oh, if I actually get to go build something, then I'll get the little charge out of having automated it. I'll probably learn something along the way. And the side benefit is I'll never have to do that again. And I might be able to repurpose it. Maybe that's another factor. Maybe I can't justify it for automating this task, but now I've got something that's 3/4 built that I can, you know, automate the next task and just convince myself that it all works out as being the right thing to do.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I actually have a good example of like how the notification system basically saved us from having a lot of bad data. Because besides like the daily check, we also have a sort of semi-real-time check because the real-time reporting in GA is also pretty limited. So we have another system that basically checks the data of the past 4 hours every hour. So it's way more flexible because we can use all the possible fields in the reporting API of Google Analytics. The only downside is that we have data of 4 hours ago instead of right now. But that does give us an indication that when an important campaign measurement seems to be dropping, we get a notification within 4 hours. And we do have examples where normally when that would happen on a, say that on 3 in the afternoon, a campaign measurement breaks and it flatlines at that moment. The day itself might just be a bad day if you don't have any notifications turned on. The second day is totally gone. And then on the third day, you finally see that you miss a full day of data. When you have the data checked upon every 4 hours, then you know at least within a day that something is probably wrong and you can look into it. So that's a big like data quality saver as well with automation.
Do the clients necessarily understand the value of this? I'm just thinking like it's one of those things that if you had missing data, like by the time it got to day 3, the client would be completely pissed. But in this circumstance, they don't know that. So, yeah, I mean, do they realize how awesome it is? Or Like, do you kind of have to prove the value to them?
They start realizing it. We actually have with one client, we're currently in talks with setting up like a different version that sends a notification to their developers whenever a metric drops, but our, where the message for our campaign team is really the name of the metric that they report on. For the developers, we would include all the data layer variables that are required to have a successful measurement. So when a measurement drops, they know, oh, we have SKU XYZ missing in the data layer. Let's look into that so we have the right numbers again. And if you really want to do it in a proper way, I think you should even monitor it as soon as the measurement fires when a customer lands on the thank you page, so that you just validate, does the whole e-commerce data layer contain all the values that are required to have a proper e-commerce measurement, for example. And when a field is missing, you send a notification right away instead of waiting for it to end up in your reports, then checking it 4 hours later, and then sending a message out.
So we're talking about alerting is kind of one way to check for data integrity based on look at the data flowing in the market. And I'll say like AlarmDuck and then kind of native things within Adobe Analytics and Google Analytics are kind of what I feel like are kind of market solutions for that, which don't have nearly the marketing going behind them as the other way of checking data, which is more the crawl based auditing, the observe points, the hub scans. Do you do, I guess, do any of you guys have much experience with the kind of crawling and tag checking on a recurring schedule approach? And do you have any thoughts about that?
Not really. I probably should look at it, I guess. This is, to be honest, this whole conversation is making me feel really guilty that at the moment, the way I stumble on a problem is someone being like, oh, this looks weird. And me being like, yeah, that does look weird. Let's do some digging.
I feel like if you listen to if you sat and watched Eric's presentation at Super Week, you'd be like, oh my God, I'm doing nothing. I'm terrible. Mm-hmm. If you listen to auditing crawling tools, and I always struggle with those because we have clients who use them, but that's another one of those. The investment to set it up can be really, really high, especially like what was making me think of it, Eric, was when you were talking about the data layer on the, you know, the order complete page. Well, that's a lot easier to check in the data that's coming in because you've got data being passed in and you can say, did the data get passed in? Was it complete? Now it's one step removed from saying, is the data layer right there? Some other little things could have broken along the way. If you want to do an audit and you want to do it thoroughly, then you've got to have something that can crawl all the way through and make the purchase. And you have to configure all the rules to say, here's how you have to check that everything looks valid in all of those data layer things. And I'm sure I'll upset some of those companies, like at a level of saying, did a tag go away? Totally get it. Cause you can just point it at the site, say, crawl it, make sure that the Adobe tag or the Google tag or whatever tags I want to have on every page are there. When it comes to saying, are these custom dimensions being, are these EVARs being populated under the correct scenario? To me, it winds up being back to that. What's the cost to set up that automation? And it's inherently going to be kind of this blanket thing. I like the way that you talked about the alerting system you guys have set up that said, look, we're trying to focus on what are the metrics being used for this campaign. It's hard to imagine a tag auditing tool having its configuration updated with each campaign and even what that would look like. It just feels like a very high cost thing to try to maintain, whereas alerting seems like it can be a lower cost that gets lower and lower as you build out, you know, your solution, you know, more and more.
Yeah, well, we did do some tests with like proper crawling, which you are referring to. So we mainly use Python within the team to run our, like create our projects, do our automation stuff, but also our more advanced analysis. But there are these things called headless browsers. I don't know if any of you heard of them, but you can basically simulate browser behavior with them. The hard part is that you need to program every behavior that a user needs to do to get from the homepage to the thank you page. You have to program that into your code. So And it may work for the current website, but as we all know, as analysts, that websites tend to change a lot, and often the measurements break. So probably often also your crawling system will break because for some reason they decided to change the button of the click out to the checkout, and then your whole measurement might be broken, but also your whole auditing system might be broken.
Plus the number of ways you can go down, like how many different options, you know, I bought one product, I bought three products, I used a coupon code, I checked that my shipping address was the same as my billing address, like all these things that if there is a bug in the system could be what causes a tag misfire, but chances are you scripted or recorded one path through, which is good. If there's a catastrophic break, that would catch it. But if there's a corner case where, you know, oh, it was the scenario where somebody was checking out on a Samsung Galaxy running IE or something weird, you know, chances are you're not going to script all of those. And therefore, you'd probably find it. You'd still say, even if you've done that, you'd still want to have the alerting system is a secondary
right
check. And in many cases, it feels like it would capture it first.
Yeah, I mean, there's sort of these multiple points of entry into these types of tools, right? Which is sort of like as you start and then along the way and then sort of riding along the top. And like in the US, ObservePoint is one of those tools, and they've created this thing where you can record the journey, sort of like, oh, here's the path that customers take, and if tagging gets broken along this path, let me know. But the problem is if that path changes, or like to your point, the website's going to change, so you're always having to go back and re-architect those paths. So you need some sort of alerting function in the mix as well.
So you need to automate your automation.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
but even if you think about it, you can record the path, but if you think of an Adobe implementation where you'd say, well, at each step, these are the 17 patterns or values that I expect for each one of these variables. Same thing for GA. If you're populating custom dimensions and custom metrics, like you have to say, here's the step I want you to follow. Check that the tag's there. Check that the tag has these values, or even more robust but harder to do, here's the patterns to look for.
Right.
You know, because you want to find that it's not, you know, passing a null value into some.
Right.
You know, do you say it's passing a value? It's passing the exact value? It's passing right. A value that fits
is
this
it a properly
pattern.
Formatted value and all those kinds of things?
I want to just like throw this up in the air. As we're talking about this, part of me is just like, I don't know if it's worth it. Like the use case that Eric's talking about is, you know, notification, if you've got a campaign running and some metric that is dependent on the success of the campaign is dependent on, yeah, that sounds completely reasonable. But checking that every single tag fires every single time, I'm like, I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think nobody actually does that. They never get to that. It has the capability right. to do that. I'm pretty convinced it gets sold as though you're going to do that because nobody's thinking through what would actually take to do it and then to maintain it to what you guys have brought up that, oh, wait, now we redesign the site or we, you know, swap something out and now all of those crawlers are busted and we have to go back and tweak them.
Yeah. And I think to your point, Mo, I think it is a matter of scale in a certain sense, because if you can kind of know like your domain space is enough so that you can kind of get in there and do checks on a very efficient basis, then you don't necessarily need to employ that. But like, what if you're managing hundreds of websites in some capacity, then you have no ability to cross check all of them. And so like in that scenario, then you've got to use tools to basically be a force multiplier in terms of checking for certain things. I do actually think this is a space that really could incorporate machine learning effectively in different ways. And I'm sure probably some of the tools out there do, at least in some capacity.
I mean, I would say that Adobe, when they talked about their use of machine learning, and they talk about, or AI even, with Adobe Sensei, and that was the cool demos were in kind of the visual image stuff. They, at least as of a year or two ago, we're looking at their anomaly detection and calling that machine learning, which it's a little bit of a stretch, but my experience with that in theory sounds good. It's the come up with a forecast and see if you fall outside the 95% or 99% expectation. But boy, it is really hard to get it to not trigger false positives. And you pretty quickly run into that, oh crap, I'm getting alerts. Like the times that I've set that up where I'm trying to use things that are in the machine learning realm, and then I wind up going back and saying, screw that. I'm just going to set a threshold, you know, for this metric, if it drops below 10 in any given hour, for this metric, if it drops below 1,000 in any hour, and those wind up being more reliable. But that may be, it may be coming.
So can we talk about reporting now?
Yes.
The thing I get really excited about.
Right after I copy and paste our Twitter metrics and our YouTube metrics into my dashboard every day.
Okay. The reason I really want to talk about it is because at the moment, yes, I am automating some reporting, and I was, big shock, chatting to my sister about it. And I had this really, I was basically going through and building out like 60 metrics that I didn't need right now, but I know that over the next 6 months, 9 months, someone's going to ask me for. So I was like, I'll build them out now in all of my code. And this is where I definitely want some advice. And Eric, you might have some thoughts on this. What I was doing was like creating all the calculations in my code, because I don't know if I'm going to stick with like the reporting tool that I've got. And then I'm like, oh, I can pick up my code and just move it to another visualization tool if I want. My sister's like, you're such an idiot, whatever. Just use the calculated metrics. It's fine. Like, build something that you need for the next 3 months. And then in 6 months, if you need all of that, those 60 other metrics, then build it then. And I was like, but I'm trying to future-proof it. And she's like, you're a team of one, like build what you need for now and then deal with the hurdle when you need it. So who's right?
To be honest, I think your sister is. So I'm a big fan of creating like the bare minimum you need right now to prove a point. So in my opinion, it doesn't really make sense to make a report bigger than it needs to be or more advanced than it needs to be because you think it will be required in the future. And on the other hand, I think it's also good that when someone has an extra request for you, that you don't have it ready right away. You really involve them in the updates that you're implementing for the report. So you don't add a metric because that's probably something that you've always done and you know they're going to need it, but you're going to add the metric because the business directly asks you to add it. So that makes it a direct relation to the business request instead of assuming that it will probably be a business request in the future.
There's lots of eye rolling going on because I know he's right.
Well,
and so is she.
Well, I've watched the automation of reports. Like, it is so predictable when, and this is kind of consulting or agency side with a client, where you try to say, hey, we get it. You need to see something on a recurring basis, and we'll give you this basic report. This is not answering all your, no matter how many times you say, this is just so you're getting your KPIs and you can look at them, guaranteed 100% of the time, it will come back with, can we add this? We have this one question. Can we add this to the report? Where it's like, it's one question. We can answer the question and move on. And then the reports start to bloat. And I feel like as an analyst, it's easy to get sucked into that. Like, ooh, cool. I'm going to make this report bigger. And I can go back 15 years. You know, you wind up reports that are 35 pages long. And then you say, oh, I'm going to buy a BI tool so I can automate the production of this 35 page long report that no one is actually accessing. But hey, once it's automated, who cares? What's the harm if it's automated? It costs us nothing to produce it. And I think there actually is harm in having reports go out. It is like the alerts that it's going out every day and literally no one's looking at it. And the analytics team is saying, we're doing a good job because we're producing through automation this daily report. And no one's actually looking at it. That was like three rants kind of blended into like, one. So I don't know how coherent.
Lots of rants. I agree, but I don't know. There's also, and this is where the whole effort, cost, time balance thing comes into it. If you're writing the code and it's going to take you like a couple of minutes now versus in 3 weeks when they look at you know, your MVP and are like, oh, can we add like a year-on-year calculation just so that we know this? And to go back then and make that change is going to take you like 4 hours. I don't know. Like I totally see both perspectives, but there's this little bit of me that's like, you know that they're going to ask to see year-on-year because that's what, you know, ex-executive always asks for. Isn't it worth like the 3 or 4 minutes now to write one extra calc and then it's all, I don't know. I see both, yeah.
Put my rant aside, I more often do what you just described. It's like they may not have asked for it, but I know they're going to as soon as they see it.
It's also like
they're
going to
say, oh, can we get...
It's the quick win of someone being like, oh, I need this thing now. And you're like, oh, yeah, I can add that to the report. You know, give me a couple of days. And then you go back the next morning and you're like, boom, I've added it. And they're like, you're amazing. So
I've got cases where, recent cases, where they're like, we need a report that does X. And I'm like, literally, the report you asked for has a dropdown that literally gives you that. I didn't really want to, but I did. And I thought ahead. And they're like, oh. And then 2 weeks later, they ask for something that's also in this. I'm like, it's a one-page report with some dropdowns. So, sorry. Now we're getting to...
So is that a form of automation, though?
What?
Predicting the future?
No, but that's about like when you're doing automation, how should you go beyond what your stakeholder has asked for if you know that it's something that...
Well, but there's also the way of you go beyond. I mean, I've done this too, where I'm like, they're going to ask for this. Like I went ahead and pulled 10 metrics in the automation, but they've only asked for these 3. So I didn't expose the other ones. It cost me literally nothing other than a little bit of thought to prep for that. So that if they ask for it, then it's not already there because they hadn't asked for it yet, but it's 80% of the way there and I can go enable it. I still feel like reporting in general is the, even I think like a lot of BI tools are like, look, you can make this dashboard and the executive can look at it every day and it's automated. And you're like, yeah. And 95 times out of 100, they're not looking at it. Or if they do look at it, it's not answering the questions they expect it to answer. And you're potentially on the slippery slope of trying to continue to automate things that really shouldn't be automated.
So here's the other thing is the danger zone, not the drinking game, the like the place as the analyst.
There's a drinking game called Danger Zone?
Oh, Tim, that's a long story. We're going to have to take offline. When, and this is what always scares me, when reports especially start to get automated, whose job is it? I mean, like, is this where you should be using alerts? The reports are just getting automated. You never have to look at them. And then suddenly, like, a metric falls off a cliff. Is this, like, that's the exact use case you should have all your alerts set up? Because ultimately, once it's automated, and this was happening a bit at my last company, who owns the report? Is it the person that built it? Is it the person that uses it? Is it the person, the relevant analyst for the team? Like, whose job is it to make sure that that report continues to be accurate? And like the ownership of that can be really tough. Because sometimes the people doing the automating are not the people that are actually the analyst in the team or the marketer that's using it.
Well, to me, you basically summed up the very reason why we started with the whole notification project. So that's really, really nice. Basically, my future view on the whole thing that we do is basically we do a lot of implementation work, which is like a hard part of getting good data in. Then you can do analysis based on the data, which is something we as analysts can do. We can create reports based on the data that are easier to use by the non-analyst in the business, basically. But a lot of the decisions that we make based on a report are basically if X, then Y decisions. So you see something happening in the data. And the easiest check we could automate was a flat line because no one is looking at a report every day, but it's really important when there's a flat line in a report and for an important metric. So that's the very reason why we set up notifications is that people don't tend to look at reports every day, but some checks that we should do in those reports are really easy to automate. So why don't we just automate them to make life better for all of us, basically.
I will make the case for the whole not looking at every report. I probably I've had cases where if I'm sending a daily report, I know that nobody's looking at every day, but at times it's the most expedient way to say whenever they do need it, they may not look at it for a month, but if they do have a question, they want the most recent data and they at least know that it's arriving and they can pull it. That still feels a little, if those are reports going into your inbox, that still feels kind of old school, but it's also kind of somewhat the reality. I do like the years ago, I drew up sort of what's my conceptual platonic ideal of a good dashboard. And it was really nothing but like random, like just notifications on a dashboard. Like everything else is grayed out. You have 20 metrics that are on the dashboard, but the actual dashboard only showed the ones that were out of spec based on your target or your needs, which is, I think, a precursor to push notifications that are, look, if you don't get notified, assume that everything is basically what you would expect it to be. And now we're only going, the report is only going to be something that's out of whack. Although people sometimes still want to know how much traffic came to the site yesterday.
But that's what I was going to say, like, as an analyst, and this is what scares me sometimes, like you automate something, so you stop looking at it every day. And so you stop being so close to the numbers. And then someone says to you, what was traffic yesterday? And you're like, it's on that dashboard. Whereas when you kind of have to do it every day, there is this subject matter expertise that you kind of just get by osmosis of just having to do whatever that like 2-minute task is that forces you to stay like really close to the numbers.
Michael's going to tell his story about the report he set up for himself that he looked at every day.
I'm not, because there's nothing to do with automation. I mean, it was an automated report.
It was automated.
It was.
And you were looking at it every day.
I did look at it every day, but it was for that reason. It's just basically these were context metrics. So it's just setting the context for everything. And so that way, as other information flies in, you can quickly, in your own mind, sort it, right? That's all.
I have a feeling like we've pissed off half our audience in one way or another with this whole discussion.
Fine. Let's get started on the second half.
And when have you ever been worried about pissing people off?
Yeah, Tim. Seriously. If you're pissed off by this, fuck you. That's right. we hadn't sworn yet on the show, so that was
said shit. Reason. That counts.
Oh, you did? I'm sorry. I must have missed it.
That's probably the other aspect of automation of reporting. There's automation where a tool has actually got the data available for automated. It's automated going somewhere that somebody can access it whenever they want it, and it's current data. And then there's automation of reports that are push through email or through something else. Would those both count as automation?
So, okay. This is an actual related to the topic discussion. Eric, who also makes sure that all of your scripts that do the automation are running? Like, do you have notifications to let you know that all of your Python codes run successfully? And like, how do you guys manage
that? And what monitors the scripts that are running those notifications? And is it a whole inception?
Well, two things are, I think, pretty important in automation. First of all, we don't have notifications for our own notification systems, but I do really like the concept.
Do you have an intern who just sits there and watches the whole time? Because that would be awesome.
What we do with all our automation projects is we measure them. So we have a measurement protocol hit go out for every notification that gets sent. So we know how much basically value we could potentially have added to the business. We have another project where we place tags automatically. So we measure every tag we've placed automatically with a measurement protocol so we can show how much automation we do. So that's one thing we do. And now I have to think about the other part of the question.
Well, how do you actually monitor how do you know if the script breaks?
Yeah, so we don't monitor if the script breaks, but we did set it up in a really scalable way. So instead of having one big project running in our case, AWS, so Amazon Web Services, we set it up so one script gets all the notification lines from the Google Sheet, and that fires another script per notification that we want to check. So in that case, if one of the notifications is configured incorrectly or has a corrupted setup or whatever, that's the only notification that breaks. So we do not monitor that right now. So we could potentially set that up as well. It's pretty easy to do, actually. So probably when I'm done with this show, I'm going to write some tickets in our system and have someone build that. So that's a really good one.
The next hackathon, the first hour of the next hackathon is going to be.
But it's actually, yeah, we did think of like scalability. So making sure that every function that we want to do, so a data check, is handled independently from the others. So if you have I think we have like tens of checks configured right now. And normally if you had one big project and one of them was like badly configured, the whole project would break and no notification would be sent or no data check would have been run by the system. And now that only happens when it's badly configured for one single check. But we don't notify people, to answer your question.
Slacker. Like our code, we have to worry about other people, the developers screwing up other stuff. Our code is rock solid.
We never make mistakes.
That's right.
Actually, when I uploaded the project for the first time, I did a big screw up. So that was pretty funny. I thought we were uploading like the real time checks, and I was really excited about the project, so I did it on a Saturday morning. So I looked for the first real time function that we had in AWS, and I actually overruled a real-time snowplow pipeline function of a client with our notification system. And I didn't know how to roll it back, but luckily it was a test pipeline, so it wasn't used by the client yet. But I got a pretty bad feeling when that happened. But you learn from your mistakes, right?
Automation.
Absolutely.
Double-edged sword.
I've got lots of learnings to prove it.
This is awesome. All right. Well, we do need to head towards wrap up. But as we get started on that, this has been a great conversation, and I don't think automation could have helped it be more better. So
that is just the sort of delusional subjective assessment that human beings tend to make.
Great, unique.
And I will say, well, Eric did a presentation at Super Week, and we will throw the link to those slides in the, which doesn't have all the context, because it compare, but you'll learn about the Haddon matrix, Haddon matrix, and other exciting things, and then you'll be able to pepper Eric with questions through the Measure Slack on the details.
I've edited out the unfunny joke that Michael made about my cousin, the Large Hadron Collider, at this point, because I found it mildly offensive.
Anyway, one thing we don't edit out on the show is our last calls. So we just go around the horn. We talk about something we found interesting. Mo, do you have a last call?
Okay, mine is just for the lols today. I feel like everyone needs a laugh. So the Football Federation in Australia has had this big article published about how they put out a survey, and basically the survey was a failure because it talks about how everyone really doesn't care about football, aka soccer. But the actual failure, when you read the article, is the visualizations of the survey results. And if you ever need an example of bad data visualization mistakes, this is 100% the article to read. It is so entertaining. Everyone in Australia was reading it, and we've had the most robust discussion about how bad it is. So, yeah, if you need a laugh today or just to know that you're doing your job properly, we'll share the link to that article.
Very nice.
Can I go next as a companion?
Yeah.
Last call.
Hey, Tim, what's your last call?
Well, so one, I don't know that I've ever done a last call that came through Pavel Kapuscinski, and both of you have.
What?
So I'm gonna rectify that. He had shared a link with me that is from the Financial Times called "The Science Behind Good Charts." And so it talks about, like, you know, pie charts versus bar charts and why. But what's kind of interesting is that it actually has sort of a quiz. So they're a little bit contrived as to, you know, you're trying to pick what's the third largest segment on this pie chart. And it's a pie chart that even a person who's terrible with pie charts would never actually make. But it's actually kind of useful to go through and just pay attention to how much harder you have to think to try to answer these questions. And you'll get some of them wrong. So it's kind of it's also a data viz oriented thing, but it's a little more interactive than just reading about the concepts combined with actually trying to apply them by answering quiz questions.
Very nice.
Courtesy of Pavel.
All right. Eric, what's your last call?
Well, I'm actually a big reader. So my last call is a book. And it's pretty interesting because it's a book from 1976. It's from Joseph Weizenbaum. It's called Computer Power and Human Reason. And basically, he created it.
From 1976, yeah. You said?
So Okay. Basically, he created a chatbot back in 76 at MIT. Yeah, that's pretty awesome all by itself. And basically, what he saw that people were like projecting human emotions on his machine, even though people knew it was a machine. And that made him think of the, like, even if we're able of putting a lot of computer power to making human decisions, we never really thought about what decisions should we hand over to computers. So basically, his whole book is an argument that goes from explaining the concept of computers to whether or not we should hand over certain decisions to computers at all, which is a really interesting thought, and especially since it's a book from 76.
Mm.
Is chapter 7 about having computers do alerting notifications of your web traffic?
Yes. No, it's not.
It was very, very prescient.
If it was, that'd be amazing.
I love that. This like amazing old book, and I'm like, haha, look how stupid someone is.
Which I'm looking at that article right now, and oh my God, these are pretty atrocious visualizations.
They're good. They're really good.
They're, yeah.
Well, let's not take away from the fact that there's a guy from MIT who created a chatbot in 1976. So,
especially since we threw MIT under the bus on the last episode of the podcast.
Exactly.
So,
all right.
What's your last call, yeah. Michael?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. Well, we can't do a show about alerts and that kind of stuff without me bringing up my two close friends and colleagues who created AlarmDuck. So if you have Adobe Analytics and you want to integrate anomaly detection into Slack, you should definitely check out AlarmDuck. So that's just a little plug there. Those guys are awesome, and AlarmDuck is pretty cool. But really what I want to talk about was, well, I know I have two more things I want to talk about because there's one that's fun. I'll do the fun one first, and then I'll just sort of get a vibe for whether we've got more time.
You check with the moderator.
Yeah, I'll check with the moderator, see if, you know, he'll let me eke out a threefer. There's this guy, I just randomly ran across him on Twitter, but he's got this new comic series that kind of just blew up, and he's publishing on Instagram called Strange Planet. And his comics are hilarious and a little bit quirky, and I love them. And you should check them out because I think you will love them too. Okay, now you've been listening and you've been thinking, well, it's obvious to me that if you automated this aspect of this thing, as we've been discussing, that you could do this, that, or the other thing. I don't really know what you've been thinking. I'm not a mind reader. But you might have been thinking about things pertaining to the show, and we'd love to hear about it. And the best way to talk to us is on the Measure Slack, where you can reach all of us, including Eric. And we'd love to hear from you also. We have our new LinkedIn group, so go on LinkedIn and search for that. Join, we'll let you in. We don't really do anything on it yet, but that's definitely something. And then obviously Twitter, you can reach out to us there as well. Eric, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been delightful.
Thank you for having me.
There you go. So, you know what's funny? So here's the funny thing, Eric. One time I didn't stop after saying that, and everybody gave me a bunch of grief. And so now I'm like, well, I'll stop. And then you're just sort of like,
Eric, Eric listens so, enough. He knows, like, yeah, he's not really looking for a response. He's going to talk.
Right, yeah, I'm just going to go right through. Can't win for losing. All right. No, it's fine. Anyways, it has been awesome having you on the show. And certainly, I think I could join both of my co-hosts, Tim and Mo, in telling every analyst out there, get smarter, get lazier, but gosh darn it, keep on analyzing.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Measure Slack group. We welcome your comments and questions. Visit us on the web at analyticshour.io, facebook.com/analyticshour, or at analyticshour on Twitter.
So smart guys wanted to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
Analytics. Oh my God. What the fuck does that even mean?
I seriously, the last few episodes, I'm like, something's wrong, Tim. Tim looks really concerned, and then I realized it's just his face.
One of the 17 reasons that I've now decided that Australia is on the short list for our next move.
Just take photos, go kayaking.
Just take photos. You just summed up. Yeah, here's what Tim does. He takes photos and goes kayaking.
Basically, 2 years ago, I heard about Super Week through your podcast.
Really?
And then a year later, I could present at Super Week. And then that got me into the podcast again. So it's kind of a nice circle.
That is a great circle.
After today, we'll never speak again. But
you know the joke's not funny when you explain it, right?
Well, I know, but then Tim's going to come and edit out the pause. And it's just going to sound really dumb.
I'm not sure. I still don't get it.
Sorry, just sorting out our...
I was pointing off. So I was pointing at you, but I realized it was not. It wasn't in the camera there.
I know you were like doing these ones. But it's fine. I got it. Don't worry. With you.
That's as funny as your pregnant pause at the beginning of the episode.
We might have already edited that whole thing out. Who knows? I'm gonna go back to bed now.
Rock, flag, and automation.